Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari. Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravada Kacharya Sautara Sata Shishi Narada Vandu Shishi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Bidhidi Sangha Sharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravada Kacharya Sautara Sata Shishi Narada Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Ananta Gauri Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shlahadadas Thakur Ki Jai Premsita Guru Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Govinda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radhakunda Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Adhik Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai Brihat Madanga Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 12th chapter. We're up to text 24, which doesn't have a purport, so I'll just chant that myself and we'll chant 25 together. Balaho Nabito Jagye Pulascha Karnayor Rishi Angira Mukatok Snotir Marichir Manaso Bhavat. Translation. Pulascha was generated from the ears, Angira from the mouth, Atri from the eyes, Marichi from the mind, and Pulaha from the navel of Brahma. Okay. Text 25. 25. Yeah. Dharmashtana Dakshinato. Dharmashtana Dakshinato. Yatra Narayana Swayam. Yatra Narayana Swayam. Adharma Prishtato Yasman. Adharma Prishtato Yasman Mrityur Loka Bhayankaraha Mrityur Loka Bhayankaraha Dharmashtana Dakshinato Yatra Narayana Swayam adharma prishtato yasman mrityor loka bhayankaraha. Vaishnavis, dharma, religion, sthanat, from the breast, dakshinata, on the right side, yatra, wherein, narayana, the Supreme Lord, swayam, personally, adharma, irreligion, prishtata, from the back, yasmat, from which, mrityu, death, loka, to the living entity, bhayankara, horrible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Religion was manifested from the breast of Brahma, wherein is seated the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. And irreligion appeared from his back, where horrible death takes place for the living entity. Purport. That religion was manifested from the place where the Personality of Godhead is personally situated is very significant, because religion means devotional service to the Personality of Godhead.
as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita as well as the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita, the last instruction is to give up all other engagements in the name of religion and take shelter of the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms that the highest perfection of religion is that which leads to the devotional service of the Lord. Unmotivated and unhampered by material impediments, religion in its perfect form is the devotional service of the Lord. And irreligion is just the opposite. The heart is the most important part of the body, whereas the back is the most neglected part. When one is attacked by an enemy, one is apt to endure attacks from the back and protect himself carefully from all attacks on the chest. All types of irreligion spring from the back of Brahma, whereas real religion, the devotional service of the Lord, is generated from the chest, the seat of Narayan. Anything which does not lead to the devotional service of the Lord is irreligion, and anything which leads to the devotional service of the Lord is called religion. Omagana timadandasya jananjana shalakaya shakshurumilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakara mayam didati swapadantikam. So at least twice in this purport, Prabhupada makes the point that religion means devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And further down he says, real religion, the devotional service of the Lord, etc. And he says something else. So religion, real religion is devotional service. Well, what's devotional service? Devotional service is pleasing Krishna. When we please Krishna, that's devotional service. And Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. So what's pleasing to Krishna? Well, we get information, from the books and from Prabhupada. Way to please Krishna is to please the spiritual master. That's what's pleasing to Krishna. And how do we please the spiritual master? Well, how do you please anybody? You please somebody by fulfilling their desire. Somebody has a desire, and if you fulfill their desire, they're pleased. Prabhupada would give the example, if I ask for a glass of water, you bring me a glass of water, okay, you fulfill my desire, I'm pleased. So Prabhupada has so many desires that he wanted fulfilled. The important, their desires, how we could engage in devotional service, and desires how he wanted the movement to be spread. So it's the... If we want to please Prabhupada, we have to try to fulfill his desires in relation to, his desires for the movement. So there were many, and I just wanted to focus on one in particular that I think was a major one that he expressed right towards in his last days with us here on earth. Prabhupada said, he says, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate to keep this institution together after I am gone. So that's a pretty significant desire that Prabhupada's expressing here. And that's quoted in different ways. Sometimes you hear different versions of that, but I went to the Veda base, and it appeared 17 times on the Veda base. And out of those 17, 11 were exactly these words, that your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate to keep this institution together after I am gone. So by doing this, we're fulfilling that desire. If we're trying to do that, if we're trying to cooperate to keep the institution together after Prabhupada is physically not with us, then we're fulfilling that desire. We're doing something to please Prabhupada. If we're doing pleasing Prabhupada, we're pleasing Krishna. We're engaging in devotional service. So this is a really practical way to, be thinking of devotional service or our spiritual life. How can we cooperate to keep the institution together now that Prabhupada is physically gone? And so I was, had some thoughts about that. What does it mean to cooperate? One aspect of that, very practical, simple, is cooperate means you know, everybody has a service. Everybody has a way which they fit in, you know, to the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. So one aspect of cooperating is just do what you know you're supposed to do, you know, do your service, and also be ready and willing to even do more. And that's surrender. You know, surrender is not only you're doing your service, but you have, like Prabhupada used to say, do the needful. So being prepared to do that, that's one aspect of cooperating. Another aspect of cooperating is not to try to really work at not allowing personal ambition to enter into our and pollute our devotional attitude, you know, our attitude to kind of work, serve the other devotees. That's a pitfall. That's something that's, you know, requires. Prabhupada would give this example of, because that leads to fighting, it leads to, you know, unnecessary competition. Prabhupada would give the example of there's the spiritual master and two disciples are trying to massage him. And, you know, one is massaging one part of his body, the other is massaging the other part. And they, you know, one is saying to the other, you're not massaging correctly. It's done like this. And then, you know, they're getting into, like, it's heating up. And the other one says, no, that's not how you do it. You massage like this. And it's getting more, like, aggressive. You know, they're losing sight. They're losing sight of that they're there to massage the spiritual master and make him feel better, make him feel more comfortable. And they're kind of getting into like an argument about how to massage him. Meantime, the spiritual master is lying there and he's, you know, suffering. See? Because, you know, they're roughing him up. So that's what it's like when devotees, out of personal ambition, too much competition, they, you know, they're trying to... the spiritual master suffers. The mission suffers. And the spiritual master suffers because that's, you know, non-different from Prabhupada. So that's another aspect of cooperating. And kind of like, you know, along the same lines, but slightly different, is it's important part of cooperation is to acknowledge outstanding, or just service and in general, an outstanding service by other devotees. That's important. You know, it's when somebody's doing like a really good job at something, acknowledge that. And try to assist that person. See, you know, in the material world, the opposite tendency is there. You know, if somebody's excelling, you want to kind of figure out a way to either ignore it altogether or mess it up. You know, because we don't want to see in the material world, we don't want to see people surpass us. But in devotional service, you know, that shouldn't be our mentality. Devotional service is we appreciate when somebody's doing well, and we want to assist them to, you know, to do even better. I mean, coming from a basketball background, you might have heard the expression "feed the hot hand." That's we could, you know, apply that in our devotional service. We should try to feed the hot hand. If we can see somebody's doing really nicely in their service, we should appreciate that, and we should try to think of a way to assist that person. You know, help them do even more. Like that. That's another aspect of cooperating. Here's another important point. We should, and this is something that will help us in general be able to address this particular desire of Prabhupada of, you know, showing our love for him by cooperating with this institution to keep this institution together after he's gone. Cultivate an attitude of gratitude for what Prabhupada did. Like yesterday during the class, Maharaj referred to that exchange between Sumati Maharaji and Srila Prabhupada, and how she was, in a loving way, she was chastising him. She's, you know, I've watched, seen that many times myself. You know, you're crazy. You can't go to, you know, you'll die over there. What will you eat? It'll be too cold. Yeah, and I was listening to a lecture. The other night, I heard Prabhupada, he was reflecting upon his, you know, leaving India and coming to America. And he said, at one point in the lecture, he said that nobody leaves home at 70. So even he himself was, you know, he was reflecting, who leaves home at 70? Especially with no money, basically, not knowing anybody in the place you're going to. And, you know, who does that? So the point is that, if we meditate on what Prabhupada did to start this movement, develop the movement, and and to ensure that it would go on, continue nicely, even after he was no longer physically with us, that'll help us, you know, be focused on this, you know, desire of Prabhupada that we cooperate to keep the institution together after we're gone. If we have that appreciation, that gratitude for what Prabhupada did. And on this point of ensuring that when I was preparing the class, I was, you know, thinking, well, yeah, it's what Prabhupada did to start the movement, what he did to develop the movement. And somebody might say, but wait a second, you know, Prabhupada, to ensure that the movement goes smoothly after he's gone, how come there was such a turmoil with the gurus? You know, it doesn't seem like maybe that was so well thought out. And anyway, the thought I had, this is my own, like, kind of reflection and speculation, that Prabhupada didn't overlook anything. Prabhupada put so much effort into starting this movement, into developing this movement. He thought carefully about all the other aspects of it and how and what would happen after he was gone. He made ample preparations. And, you know, we shouldn't think that, oh, Prabhupada spaced out. He didn't really, he kind of neglected to give instructions on this particular thing or that particular, no. Prabhupada was always conscious of the big picture, and he was, whatever he left us with, you know, it was, that's what he thought was the best thing, you know, the best system, the best way to go forward. That's, I think it's, I have that sort of, that's the conclusion I've come to, that Prabhupada didn't leave anything up for guesswork. However he left it with us, you know, upon leaving, that was what he had already thought about carefully and then decided that's going to be the best way it's going to work. And it's up to us to be sincere, you know, because ultimately it's not, if the disciples aren't sincere, nothing will work. But if the disciples are sincere, the followers are sincere, then what Prabhupada gave us would work perfectly. The system he gave us would work perfectly. And, you know, there's that, it's the most important regulative principle in devotional service is always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, right? So practically speaking, how we could do that is to always be thinking about, you know, how to contribute to the Krishna conscious movement. You know, that's a very practical way to implement that instruction. Always be thinking, okay, what can I do to help this movement? And, you know, and not forgetting that. You know, that's a practical way of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. So I will stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Ananda Kirtan.
Hare Krishna. I think most devotees would agree that we should follow what Prabhupada gave us, but devotees disagree with each other about what Prabhupada gave us. They interpret it in different ways or maybe understand it in different ways.
Speak louder. I kind of missed it. Say it again.
I was saying I think most devotees would agree that we should follow what Prabhupada gave us, and that's the perfect thing. But devotees disagree with each other on their understanding of what Prabhupada gave us. So can you speak about that a little bit?
Could you give an example? What you're referring to?
There's many examples. Diksha, or, you know, the initiation, Ritvik, or female Diksha gurus. I mean, there's so many, like, factions of devotees have one opinion on one subject. You don't have to speak about those specific subjects.
Okay. I got something I could say about that. I think it's in an important part in the Bhagavad Gita and the Krishna book that explains there's different types of dialogue that one can enter into. One is called vitanda. You know, it's when you're just arguing and your objective is just to defeat the opponent. You know, there's three of them, and then there's jalpa or praja, jalpa. I can't remember what the definition of that was, but then there's one called vada, And vada is when you're entering into a dialogue with other people, but for the purpose of increasing your mutual understanding. You see? Trying to get a better understanding of it. And with no, like, you don't have a personal agenda. It's not like, you know, you have an opinion, perhaps, of what you think is the correct understanding, but you're prepared, you're open-minded. You're prepared to hear what the other person has to say and think about it. And not just kind of like, you know, you're not in the boxing mood. You're not like in the mood of fighting and, you know, I don't care what this person's saying. I don't hear it. I don't understand it. And I'm just going to kind of, that won't help, you know. So I think my suggestion is when devotees are kind of not agreeing on the way something Prabhupada gave us should be understood, you have to enter into discussion about it, but it has to be in that mood. Otherwise, to the degree it's not in that mood, to that degree there won't be any progress. You know, you have to be prepared to kind of hear what the other person's saying and you know, discuss and be flexible. And, you know, just that type of mood has to be there.
I can see how that type of conversation, though, would be like an infinite, like there would be no conclusion to it. How do we actually know what Prabhupada's...
Not necessarily. You know, if the devotees are sincere and they're bearing in mind that, you know, we've got to be practical. We have a movement here. We've got to move on. We've got to make decisions on things. Then, you know, it's possible. It's possible to, you know, resolve issues if that spirit is there. That's the best thing I could say about that. Another question before... do you have a question, Maharaj, or a comment? Could we get any other questions first? Question? Put the microphone to you.
What would you call those? You said Vada was one of them?
Vada, Vitanda, Jalpa.
And what are those summed up as?
What are they summed up as?
Yeah, for instance, like, you know, you have Tamas, Rajas, which are the gunas.
Oh,
the
well,
three
Vada
modes.
Would definitely be in the mode of goodness.
So it's a mode?
No, but people who are in the mode of goodness, when they enter into a, you know,
I guess to simplify
a philosophical
question.
Discussion, they'd be entering into that mood that, you know, they have their opinion, they have their understanding, but they're prepared to hear what the other person has to say and perhaps learn something from what the other person's saying and revise their way of thinking, possibly,
right.
As opposed to just coming in there with, you know, your blinders on and just, I have a way of understanding this, I'm right, and I'm going to fight and make sure I get, you know, what I want to see happen. No, that's not going to be very helpful, I don't think, when in the assembly, you know, when dealing with in a Brahminical sort of a society where people are thoughtful and have different opinions. So
right.
You have to be prepared to have that other attitude of vada, which is, you know, trying to, vada, V-A-D-A, having, trying to come to some mutual understanding and then move forward with that consensus of opinion, mutual understanding like that, and that's practical. Another question?
Thank you.
Yeah. Rabindranath, yeah. Peru.
Yeah, you were mentioning about cooperation, how we try to help other devotees like that are expert in doing a particular type of service. But how does transcendental competition work with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just heard on Sunday, Prabhupada was talking about, you know, competition between the devotee and the Lord. You know, the devotee's always trying to please Krishna, and Krishna's trying to please the devotee. It's done without, a mentality of, there's no malice. In other words, you're trying to surpass the other devotee, perform better service than the other devotee, but it's not like, you know, you're unhappy if the other devotee surpasses you. You're happy, you know. It's like it's a different consciousness, and you have to make sure you're not allowing yourself to dip into material consciousness in your competition. So, you want to add something to that?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Question? We're still on question.
You could say, I'm sorry.
Okay. Good.
You could say that by the transcendental competition, you're actually helping each other in your service. You're actually helping each other improve your service.
Yeah, right. It can work like that.
Yeah.
Still questions, and then Maharaj's comment. Question.
So we have seen in the stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when the Prachetas got together, they were glorified because of the mutual cooperation that they had.
Yep.
And you can see that an element was there, purity. We also heard the example of that rabbi or Jewish who one time went to visit, or they were not getting along like a lot of the followers in another church or someplace, monastery. And then later on, someone came and says, well, let me solve the problem, something like that. Among you, there is a Messiah. So everybody started working together, right? Like respect for each one, because maybe this one is the Messiah. Maybe I'm the Messiah. So anyway, so the point I'm leading to, and this is my question.
Question, yeah.
So the question will be that if we want to help this movement, since we already experience that in the material world, any organization, even spiritually, wherever there are people, it's going to be conflicts. So my question is, wouldn't it be like just rational to think that it's a responsibility to each one of us to be that pure devotee? Only purity can solve all those problems. If you want to solve the problem in the whole society, ISKCON society, because conflicts are going to be there all the time. Different desires, different backgrounds, competition, like you said.
That what you're doing is you just did a sneaky way of making a comment.
Presenting the question.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a one-word answer to your question.
Please.
Yes. Yes. Question. Any legitimate question? Prema Sankirtan, and then we'll do Maharaj, and then we'll end it.
Hare Krishna. Can you explain what kind of competition we can have in our ISKCON moments?
What kinds of competition?
Yeah, what kind of? Well, about what?
For book distribution? That's a, you know.
More? It's only just that or some other kind of competition?
Off the top of my head, that's the main one I can think of, you know. Prabhupada encouraged competition in book distribution. And he seemed to think that was, yeah, actually, I mean, Rida Ananda Maharaj is kind of well known for remembering, and you know, that particular story where they were, who was it? Somebody, I think he was starting to beat Radha Damodar, and Prabhupada said, oh, when Tamal Krishna Maharaj hears about this, he will have a heart attack. And then Prabhupada said, I like this competition. So Prabhupada liked the competition between, you know, different zones and devotees. Mostly it was zones. I can't remember him emphasizing individual competition so much, but he definitely encouraged competition between the zones, you know, to be the number one place in the world for book distribution. Yeah.
Is it possible, for example, have competition who can be, like, you can say, more knowledgeable, who can, like, finish in a nice way Bhakti Shastri or Bhakti Vaibhava or, you know, Bhaktivedanta course? This also can be competition?
Yeah, I guess so. But the Prabhupada gives the, in the last sentence of the purport here, he gives the criterion, how you can, you know, judge whether it's favorable competition or not. You know, you judge a process by the results. So he says, anything which does not lead to the devotional service of the Lord is irreligion. Anything which leads to the devotional service of the Lord is called religion. So if you could see the result of the competition, that particular competition is, you know, creating an increase in enthusiasm and devotional service, and everybody's becoming more motivated and feeling inspired and more, you know, inclined to surrender more, that's good. And if it's having an opposite effect, that's not good.
Yeah. Or maybe competition can be who will, you know, attain higher stage of consciousness, like, you know, Nishta, Shakti,
yes,
you know, Ruchi.
Same response. You got to look at the result. You have to look at the result. Yeah. You judge a process by the result, right? Palena
sure.
Parichate. Mm-hmm. Okay, Maharaj's comment, and then we'll end.
Thank you very much for a nice class. I just wanted to tag on to Prem Sankirtan's question. The important point in transcendental competition is to remember, if you win, you're really not the doer. The ultimate doer is Krishna, who gives you the energy, the power, the precision, the expertise He is the all in all. But as soon as we begin to think that we are the doer, and therefore I'm better than everybody else, and we become very egocentric, and the result of egocentricism is that you become not a good devotee, but a bad devotee, because Krishna wants us to be humble. By being humble, we become humble to him, and if we are humble to him, then we receive knowledge and guidance and direction and grace. So, therefore, it is good to try to be very, very humble in the sense that we give all credit to the Lord. Every little bit of expertise that we show, instead of thinking, yes, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm glorious, I'm so nice, everybody should look up to me. No, we should look up to Krishna, who has given us that. And if we give the credit to Krishna, then we don't become egocentric, and instead we become genuinely humble. That was not the credit that I wanted, that was not the comment that I wanted to make before, but I thought it fitted into Prem Sankirtan's idea about how we deal with transcendental competition, how we deal with heroism, being important, being valuable, but really thinking God alone deserves that, and I am simply his loving servant, and the love comes from him. So that's my first point. Okay. And the second one I'll try to make shorter. The second point is, there was a point that you said, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So how to do that? It's so easy to forget Krishna. And when you forget Krishna, you forget so many other things too, which we shouldn't forget. So we have to remember that everything we have is coming ultimately from Krishna. Not a million miles away, but imminently, right here, right now. Food, clothing, shelter, health, strength, guidance, direction, information, ability, serenity, all these qualities are coming from Krishna. And if we recognize that we are receiving something which we don't even deserve, even though we've committed offenses and sins, wrongs, no goods, still Krishna says, I'm going to give him blessings so that he continues on this path, ever serving me and becoming better and better. In other words, Krishna can overlook our failings. And in spite of having the failings, we should say, well, I don't deserve this. This is not, I shouldn't be getting this. This is a gift. When we understand that it's a gift, that it's not really deserved, that it comes by Krishna's compassion, by his graciousness, by his kindness, by his sweetness, by his generosity, how can we forget him? We forget him because we think we're the doer. And the more we think that we're the doer, because I'm doing something, and forget the ultimate cause of the doership, which is, as I said, Krishna gives us food. You don't eat, you don't do anything. Food, clothing, shelter, health, strength, guidance, protection, direction, all these things are coming from Krishna. And if we continue to remember this, we will, of course, continue to remember this. That's how we forget, thinking that we're the doer, we're the great one, we're the wonderful one, we're the Lord. We have to get that out of our life and get into our life the reality, which is what I just spoke of from moments ago. And the important point is doership ultimately comes from Krishna. And if we think of that, then we don't take the credit. If we don't take the credit, then there's no ego. Ego comes from, I did it. I'm great. I'm wonderful. I'm glorious. Nothing, no one higher than me. That's what ego comes from. But we can get rid of that by realizing that, no, Krishna is doing it. He's helping. He's giving me the guidance. He's giving me the strength. He's giving me the power. He's giving me the purpose. If we think like that, where's the ego? It's all given to Krishna. And if we give it to Krishna, we're free of that horrible, horrible curse, egotism. Okay?
Thank you. Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Do you agree?